Hey everyone, this is Joe Turner, and before we jump into the next episode, which is part two of my interview series with Theo Melanson, I wanted to take a quick moment to drop a couple announcements. As you guys know, I've launched my weekly newsletter on LinkedIn where I'm listing all the resignations, terminations, and retirements of the city managers in the preceding week. I also have a job board on there. So if you support the show, you support what I'm doing on LinkedIn, and you want to help me out while also helping out your city, please consider putting in your senior level, executive level recruitments in the newsletter. It's only $100. If you're a city manager listening to this podcast, please ask your human resources director to put my newsletter on the distribution channel for job announcements for the senior level positions. And if you're a city manager and you do your own recruitments, or you're looking for an assistant or a deputy city manager, county manager, please consider putting your recruitment in the newsletter. We're up close to 6,000 subscribers now in a very short period of time. It's growing on a daily basis and getting a lot of good reach on it. In fact, I just got a message today from someone who said that they applied to a position because they saw it in the newsletter. So that's the first thing I wanted to cover. The second thing I've alluded to recently is that me and Micah Gaudet, we're going to make a major announcement on May 1st. I want you to stay tuned for that. I'm not sure if it's going to be a live webinar or a live podcast or what we're going to do in that front, but it's going to be a major announcement. We're going to shake things up a little bit. If you want to be in the loop and up to date on what we're doing, make sure you stay tuned for that announcement coming May 1st. You'll be hearing more about it in the weeks to come. All right, on to the episode with Theo Melanson. I hope you enjoy it. All right. I'm Joe Turner, and this is the City Manager Unfiltered Podcast, a podcast for city managers and other public sector executives. It is the most influential local government podcast in America, and we just had that first episode, part one, with Theo Melanson about his experience going through a domestic violence charge and being booked in jail and how to navigate those waters. And thankfully, he came out the other side relatively unscathed, relatively, I put that in quotation marks. Hey, Theo, welcome back to the show, and thank you once again for just opening up and being so vulnerable and sharing such a personal story. I know it's going to help a lot of people.
Well, thank you for having me and giving an outlet to us to be able to speak on some of these things. Quite honestly, I want to personally thank Stephen Wade for being so vulnerable as well. I can honestly say that there's a very good chance I would not have shared very much detail about my situation had I not heard his, and really empathized because mine manifested in a very different way. A lot of the same story and the feelings. And we're asked to be something that's almost impossible. And that is to sit there and deal with staff, the public, council. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're not. Some of them are nitpicking for things to try to take your livelihood away. Others are supporting you. That's a whole set of emotions. And, you know, to serve the public is an honor to do, but it also comes with rare challenges that other jobs don't come with. And to know that you're expected to not really, you have to be a stoic through all of that, that takes an emotional toll. And so being able to hear about Stephen's story really told me, you know, if it affected me that way, maybe my story will help someone so they don't fall into the same situations I fell into.
So well said, Theo. You know, I had a, I'll just say a public sector executive reach out to me after I did that Stephen Wade episode. And this person, we spoke on the phone. They asked if he could give me a call. And I said, sure, absolutely. And this person broke down crying because they went through some pretty traumatic experiences as a manager and through some very abusive, you know, trying times in their community. And they just, you know, it was overwhelming. And this person was so moved by the Stephen Wade interview, and they were crying with me on the phone. It was one of the most meaningful phone calls I've had with a fellow, with a peer. And, you know, it makes me feel good to know that many of these podcast episodes that I'm putting out are having such a beneficial or positive impact on others. And thank you again, Theo. I mean, it's tough to get city managers to open up about a lot of stuff. You know, it's kind of like a quick little segue or diversion is, you know, one of the things I was concerned about when I started this podcast is, was I going to be able to get city managers to come on a show and even talk about some of these things, right? Because it's tough for us to talk about the things that we do for a living because we are under a microscope. I mean, the reality is, Theo, is that people who live in your community, your governing body, even perhaps, they're going to listen to your interview. You know what I mean? Or these city managers, come on, they have people who are going to listen to these interviews. And so it's tough. Hell, half the time when someone's getting, you know, separated, you know, they sign a, you know, non-disclosure agreement or non-disparagement, so they can't come on the show and talk about it. And I just appreciate your candor and your courage. Really means a lot to me. And I know it's going to mean a lot to people who listen to the first episode. And I'm really excited to delve into this part two, which was really going to be part one, but you know, you never know how an interview is going to shake out. And so we're going to talk now about the situation with your police chief. Before we unpack your situation, I'm going to share a little bit of my story. And that is, in my first job as a city administrator, I was working in a small town, and this is no joke, Theo. I got hired on a Friday. And then the very next Friday, the police chief is sending me a text message apologizing for how they behaved with me. And we got into a little bit of a situation. Okay. And I tried to work through it. And I just, you know, within the first 2 weeks, I knew that this relationship wasn't going to be very fruitful. You know what I mean? And I was scared. I was, to be quite blunt, I was scared. This was my first city administrator gig. I just gotten the job. After being fired from my, I was resig fired from my public works director gig, and I needed this one to work. I needed this one to work. I just moved out of state from California to Kansas. Didn't know a soul in Kansas. I didn't have a professional network. Didn't have a personal network. I get my first city administrator gig. I just bought a house literally 2 weeks before I got resig fired. My first house payment was due 2 weeks before I got resig fired. And in most cities in Kansas, it's very difficult to get a city administrator gig unless you live in the community. And so I was very fortunate to find this small town about 20 minutes outside of Wichita that doesn't want to take a chance on me and also didn't require me to live in their community. And I get the job. And lo and behold, 2 weeks in, I'm faced with this predicament of a police chief that I feel like this is not going to work. This is just not going to work. What do I do? So I know I've talked a lot here. I'm going to kind of turn it over to you a little bit. I'm going to share a little more as our conversation goes on. But, you know, it is very tricky to navigate those waters when you have a police chief who is entrenched in the community and is liked by a lot of people. And I was kind of wanted to get your thoughts a little bit on what do you do? What's your mindset when you have a situation where you're facing a police chief who is entrenched in their community, like your police chief. So why don't you unpack the situation, give us a little bit of a background, and we can dive into it.
Sure. Well, you know, kind of to bounce off of a couple of comments you made, I was going to say, number one, I think right now, rural America is in a crisis of leadership at the local level. And I think that smaller communities are going to have to get creative in how they're going to bring talent in. You know, to your point about having a home, I think more smaller cities are going to have to bite the bullet and probably have a city manager house as part of a package that whoever the city manager is, they live in that house.
Almost so like the governor's mansion or something, right?
You're going to have to, because you're asking people to take on mortgages that are at 6-7%. I mean, not that it was easy at 3.25%, but it's definitely harder now. And so to that point, I can understand why if you're in a small town, you make a decision of like, I just bought this house. Am I really about to go after the police chief, or am I just going to sit in my corner and act like I don't see what's happening around right. me?
Very good point.
You know, and truth be told is I understand why people make those decisions. You have to calculate it out, especially if you have a wife, kids, depending on you to get it done. So I say all of that is that my first calculation that I would tell any city manager, if you're about to have to go up against any of your public safety executives for any reason, is you really need to understand the facts of the situation. I mean, because you're likely not going to win based on the moral support, you know, because the city man, nobody grows up and says, I want to be a city manager. Every little boy and many little girls say, I want to be a police officer one day. I want to be a fireman one day.
Right, right.
But you're already at the disadvantage because no one says, I would like to see the monthly budget statements of the city. That's not really.
Well, hell, you didn't even know what a city manager was till you got to master school, right? So
Yeah. I was about 24 or 25 years old before I even knew what it was.
Yeah.
But guess what? Most people. Most of my family still doesn't necessarily understand what a city manager is. So, and I've been doing it for over a decade. So that's your first thing is that if you're waiting on there to be a groundswell of people saying, yes, the city manager is great. and a police chief is terrible. That's just not how that works. It's going
to well,
be
you know, and you, well, you know, Theo, and I talk about this with quite a few folks, and I try to communicate to them. I go, you know, in a lot of communities, especially a small town, the police chief has more of a public face and has more interaction with the public than the city manager. They're more visible. And, you know, there's a lot of our peers who tend to be desk jockeys. You're really running a perilous race if you are just sitting behind a desk locked in City Hall 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, because that police chief, guess what? They're out there at the crosswalk, right? Depending on a small town, right? They're at the school crosswalk in the morning, you know, high-fiving the kids as they're walking across the street. They're stopping at the, you know, a small town. Like, you know, my police chief, the one I had to get rid of, you know, he had a knack for finding the driveway of every council member. You know what I mean? He could find every council member's driveway and go there and park there and chew the fat for, you know, a half hour or whatnot. And, you know, you got to be very careful when you got the police chief who's high-fiving the kids on the way to school and stopping by all the local businesses, you know, throughout the week and so forth and so on. So if you are a city manager, and you're, especially if you're working on a small town, you need to realize that there's a lot of politics to your job that you might not want to embrace. But if you want to have a leg to stand on when it comes time to battle, you need to think long and hard about what kind of palm pressing and shoe leather you're wearing out when it comes to working in your community. Was that fair to say?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, again, you know, I would say is that, you know, you have to do that as a city manager. I just think that we're at a very distinct disadvantage because people don't relate to the job. People Nope. relate to a mayor. They understand Yes. the mayor. In fact, most of the time they think the mayor does what the city
is manager the city manager.
Does.
Yeah.
So there's part of that issue, right? So, I mean, like, so, because now you almost, I feel like sometimes when you're in these conversations, when you say, but we have a mayor and we have a police chief, you kind of seem like an appendix in this whole equation here. It's like, no, I'm really important.
Not appendage, which is really important. Appendix, yeah. Which is like no one needs, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm just being honest. I mean, that's usually how, and I mean, once you educate people, they understand, oh, I get it now. Yeah, I mean, of course you have to have a full-time professional that's kind of overlooking the whole thing. I just thought that was what you elected a mayor for. I was like, well, I mean, for $50 or $0 a month, to manage a multi-million dollar organization? Obviously not.
It was either in the part one or the first part of this show, Theo, you talked about how the minute someone finds out something about you, they're going to use that negative article from your past to kind of drag it against you or drag you through the mud or whatever. The really important thing that gets lost on a lot of people is that city managers are in the I got to say no business sometimes, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's not always just being Mr. Popular. City managers don't get to be Mr. Popular. That's why a lot of times our shelf life can be pretty short, because just draw a Venn diagram. And when you tell this group no, and you tell this person no, and you tell this organization no, and you tell these folks no, eventually all these circles start to cross interlock each other. And you eventually you just got too many people who have been told no, and they want to get rid of you. That's one of the interesting dynamics of in city manager life, especially when you're going against a more popular figurehead of a community like a police chief, is you're not always Mr. Popular. You're not the guy who's gives everyone the warm fuzzies. You're really at a huge disadvantage in so many different fronts.
Right. So I think that to your point, the negative press will always be there. It's always going to come. You have to say no a lot. And also I would say that, yeah, and I'm sure you've dealt with this as well, is sometimes even saying yes doesn't upset that group, but now you've upset the other group that's against that group. And so all of a sudden,
Great point.
No matter, it didn't matter when that person walked in the room and asked for something, whether you said yes or no, you were going to upset a group of people. And that happens a lot more in the profession than I think we talk about, is that the factionalism at the local level, because it's not real. Just saying no, it's about like, but you said yes to that other one.
Right.
I said yes to you. But yeah, but you said yes to the other one, and we don't want you, you know, we don't want city resources used and, you know, for that group. You know,
So true. And the other element, which I have not had the personal experience of dealing with, at least in the terms of being a city administrator, is that you also have the union dynamic too. I don't know if you have any unions or bargaining units or police officer associations or anything like that, but that's another wrinkle to the equation as well. And hell hath no fury like a union president scorn. I mean, all you got to do is look at Cheryl Sculley down in San Antonio to get a lesson on that, right?
Right. And, you know, so I do have our collective bargaining unit for the police department. So we do have a police officers association. So I've worked with them, have a good relationship with them. We have been able to really update their contract and to bring their pay up to parity, something that had not really been the case for many, many years. So very proud to work with them as a group. And I, to be quite honest with you, as we move along, their support of my work and my budget revision to the department, it would have been, council obviously has to be the one that supports it because they have sure. to pass the budget.
Yep.
But the Police Officers Association was instrumental in ensuring its success.
So let's move the story along here and bring us up to speed. So tell us about your police chief, his history, what his status was within the organization, tenure, and then, you know, Theo Melanson decides to come to town, and let's walk us through that timeline.
Yeah. So the story kind of really begins when it was offered the job. The first person to call me to congratulate me was a former administrator for the city of Dickinson. And this person congratulated me, told me how wonderful of a community it is, but I'm going to give you one piece of advice. Do not mess with Chief Ron Morales. You will not survive it. And so, you know, obviously take that to heart, thanked this person for that information. And of course I didn't know much. I mean, you do your homework in a budget, you look things up, but you don't really know.
You don't know. You're not that intimately. You don't have that intimate awareness of a community, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you're one of your peers comes at you and gives you that little nugget of wisdom, you know that's a serious thing that you want to be careful with.
Sure. So, you know, and then I began to understand it is that, you know, the chief had, prior to being chief, was mayor of the city. And so obviously been in the community a long time, plugged in very well, had been around because he had been elected mayor, a very successful mayor. And then I think probably a year after, or maybe even a little less, had went to the police academy and was then instated as a police chief shortly after graduation. And so then had been served as chief for 25 years after that. So he was very plugged in. I mean, so I can understand why that was like the first piece of advice I received.
I mean, Theo, this is like your situation is on a magnitude so much more serious and dangerous than my situation. I mean, you're talking about literally, I mean, the former, okay, if you do the job right and you're great at politicking and you're the police chief, you're hard to touch. Throw in the fact that you're the mayor or the previous mayor too. I mean, you got votes. You got people who actually elected you into office, right? I mean, that is a dangerous combination. This guy might as well just be called Mr. Dickinson. In fact, I think one of the articles I posted, I think one of the residents did say something like he's, you know, Mr. Dickinson or something like that. Or is that fair? I don't know if my recollection is correct or not, but I mean, he was very well regarded.
Yes. I mean, I would say this too, is I think, you know, regarded well in the community and but, you know, I think even police chief, I mean, I'll go back and kind of maybe clear up or maybe correct a little bit of what I had said earlier in our kind of theoretical framework that we kind of set up. Even police chiefs sometimes have to say no, right? So it True. Was kind of weird. So it was kind of weird because, you know, not this was definitely not what my expectations, but, you know, so when you will go through the whole story, but by the end, when stories started posting it, you know, come to find out there were quite a few people in the community that very similarly were kind of had their own, like, well, I have a story about such and such, you know? So that was kind of interesting, but that didn't happen through the story, but kind of in the aftermath of the story.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, so, but there was really, I mean, I show up to Dickinson, there wasn't anything for me to, like, it wasn't like I walked in a door, I'm like, well, you know,
he's got to go, right? There's no agenda there, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, well, it's good to, I'm glad to know that, you know, what I'm dealing with at the very least. You know, obviously, you know, in our last episode, we talked a little bit about the, you know, my incident in late 21 into very early 22. What had happened was, so I get reinstated as city manager. But through the time before and after, but definitely after. I was, you know, I was like, hey, look, you know, I really want to make sure that I'm doing right by the community that has stood by me. And so I really wanted to take the time to talk with council members. You know, I hadn't even been here very long. I'm going into this budget. What do you want from the city? And they were like, we really want you to go through the budget and really start looking at efficiencies. You really need to be like, you know, we're a small budget. We feel like we're, you know, I feel, you know, they're, you know, in various ways. I mean, when you have seven people, you get seven opinions. You know what I mean?
That's the joy of being a city manager, right? You have seven different bosses or five different bosses. And
But everyone kind of had a sense that, you know, really we need someone to really look at us. And I think the best way to sum it, because they wouldn't have used the term, but it would have been like, we want to be a best practices organization. Can you help us? Can you help guide us there? Because we have to be a smaller community of 21,000. We're surrounded by League City, that's 140,000. Texas City, that's 50,000. And then you have Galveston, though it's not a large city, it's about 50,000, but it carries a name.
It sure does. I didn't realize it only had 50,000. I thought it was much larger than that.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, most people would think that. But the truth be told is that we just, you know, we have less resources. We don't have a tourism industry. We, you know, all these things. So bring some lean concepts to this organization. Okay. So we go into budget about, I don't know, maybe May 2022. You know, so all my stuff happened in January, May of 22, right, after hearing all this feedback from council.
Now, is this your first full budget cycle with them, obviously, then? Or no? Did you hit the budget before?
That's the first full budget with them.
Okay. All right.
First full one. And truth be told is there were some, you know, we needed to clean up the way we did budget. And we had a very good finance director who was relatively new himself. He had worked the previous budget, but not with me. He had really done most of it with that interim.
Okay. Between,
and so I came in very late in that first budget, like 2 months before. I mean, we adopted it a month after I showed up. You know, my hand was not really.
Yeah, no fingerprints on it. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. But this was going to be the budget, was going to be my fingerprints on it. And I'd heard, hey, efficiency. And in that conversation with multiple council members, you know, there were a few of them that were like, you know, Theo, you really, really need to look at the police department. And I was like, oh, okay. That which is true. I mean,
do you really want me to look at it? Yeah. I was like, okay.
Yeah. I'll look at it, you know, and to be fair, it does take up, you know, just like most cities, it takes up a very large percentage of any budget. Yep. In our scenario, it looks like a red herring. I mean, because our city doesn't have water and sewer services. It's actually handled by a water district. So you really have it.
You don't get to hide it, so to speak, right? It doesn't look artificially lower than it really is.
Right, right. Yeah. So I mean, it's all general fund operations. That's what we have, or general fund operations. So it is sitting, there's no revenue fund sitting there to kind of make it look different. So, I mean, it's like staring you in the face. And so I had staff reach out to all of the, well, let me put it this way. I was put on a path of like, we have a lot of administration to sworn officers.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I hadn't seen,
with
my own eyes, but you know, but I hadn't really been put on the task to go look at it.
Right.
And what was kind of interesting, I would say, is what really was kind of like the thing that I was like, you know, maybe there's something to this. Because, you know, sometimes people like, let me put it this way. Sometimes you have a council member that is like, I really don't like the police. I've had a couple of those, not actually none in Dickinson. But in other cities, I've had some of those, like, I just think that, you know, I don't like the police, so I want extra scrutiny on the police department. Well, that's not really a justification to hound the police chief, you know what I'm saying? But what was interesting in this conversation was when I was put to task to look into the police department, I told you multiple council members had brought it up. It was from council members that both were critics of the chief and supporters of the chief.
Really?
That asked me to look into it. Yes.
What was the angle of the supporters? What was that? Can you unpack that? I mean, obviously I get the detractors, but why would the supporters be wanting to more dive into that?
That that basically in recent years, there had been some additional administration positions created, and they didn't necessarily agree with this expansion of administration, but went with it because of their longstanding relationship with the chief.
Got you. And so they're thinking, hey, you're an independent set of eyes. Can you take a look and sort of maybe validate these suspicions I might have without Correct. Their fingerprints sort of being on it, right?
Correct. So I was like, okay, that's fine. So that was, like I said, that was kind of early.
Yeah.
2022. Like I said, so by May, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I'll look at it. And by, you know, I don't have a frame of reference yet. I mean, I need to go look at, you know, because I've always been in smaller cities than Dickinson. So, you know, there's factors. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, you've got to go off the FBI numbers of the thousands of people and you multiply that by three. And like,
yeah, that's, yeah, yeah. That, that's yeah.
That doesn't tell you how many officers you need and tell you how much administration you need. That's a statistic. You know, right. The FBI says, you know, some number. And even they tell you, like, no, that's not really what it, I mean, every city is different. I'll give you one example. Like, you know, Dickinson has Interstate 45 running through it. I bet you that changes your traffic enforcement when you have an interstate running through your city.
Yeah,
had never had a city up until that point have an interstate, you know, running through the town. Okay, so there's these factors that, so I wasn't going to just go walk in there and say, oh, well, this number is higher than the FBI average. So here I go. I'm about, y'all ready for this? You know, that wasn't, and it goes back to what I was telling you. You have to have facts. I mean,
yes,
because you're going to be fighting with visceral and emotional things and people that have a lot of ties and a lot of memories and a lot of love for this individual because they're the police chief. And if you think you're going to win on that arena, that's not where the battle's going to be won. The battle's going to be won on stone cold facts. So I needed stone cold facts. Either way, whether we were not going to do anything on budget or if we're going to make a change.
And state in the obvious for anybody who's listening, obviously the city managers know, if you're going to go toe-to-toe or battle with one department, you better make sure, if you're going to go to battle with any department, it's going to be that police department. You better make sure you have your ducks in a row. You got your I's dotted, your T's crossed, and you're buttoned up because you can't go in there half-assed. That's for sure.
Yes. So, you know, the conversation is ongoing and I get HR involved. I said, look, you know, I don't have time to poll every municipality around me, but you know what? You're HR. You do. And so I say, would you be gracious enough to do this for me? I said, I need this to keep it simple because, as you know, Joe, every city's different. Some cities have animal control under them.
Yep.
Some
code cities, enforcement.
Yep. Code enforcement. That is not really going to be a good match. I cannot put total employees to administration because
right.
What I really need to get down to is, what is a police department about? It's about deterrence of crime. So what I need to know is how many administrators are over. It was kind of interesting because what we did was, so like some agencies have like a captain over completely non police functions. Like, let's say you have a captain and they take care of code enforcement, animal control. You almost wonder, do they even like that captain? Because it gave them
things. They got the community service officers or whatever. All basically been banished to, you know, the Siberia of the department, right?
Yeah. So you know, so that's another factor that we were trying to account for. So what we ended up doing was like, okay, administration, in which administration is overseeing in some aspect sworn officers on the street or detective. Okay, that's the idea. So we want to keep it simple because can't really get into this whole other world. We end up doing another analysis showing like all of administration to total employees, but we didn't do that till later. So what happens is HR comes back and is like, here's your numbers, or explains to me, here are the numbers. And our numbers for administration to sworn officer compared to any sister city, more rural, less rural, larger, smaller. We had on average three times more administrators than we overseeing on a per sworn officer basis than any other agency.
That's a crazy number.
And actually there was one, it was kind of funny because, and I'll save it as the story goes on, because there is a little caveat to that that's kind of fun or funny to me. I present this around, you know, so that it took her a month or a month and a half to put this together. This was not like a May and then 2 days later she brought it back. She right. was calling. And, you know, sometimes agencies take a while to get back to you. And anyway, so it took a while for her to kind of get this information put together. So it's like early July.
And we're now, finishing. Is Chief Morales in the loop on this? Does he know you're doing this? Is this kind of being done on back channel? Like, what kind of a dialogue have you had with the chief regarding this look at administration? Or are you keeping it under wraps at this point?
At this point, I really didn't engage him because really I wasn't getting into a philosophy. Like, maybe there's a policy reason. Like, I mean, yeah. At this point, I mean, like, I just think, because here's the
thing. You're just doing fact finding at this point.
Fact finding. I just need some numbers. I just don't even know what the conversation would be. Because, you know, here's the truth. What if the numbers, what if I'm sitting here telling the chief, well, I'm going to ask every agency their numbers to yours. Could he get defensive? Mm-hmm. What's that going to do for the next month, the month and a half in the relationship? Especially if the numbers came back and he was like right in the middle of the pack. Did I just stir up a hornet's nest for no reason at all?
Yep.
So I said, let me at least just get the numbers. So I get the numbers, and these numbers are, like, you know, truth be told, off the charts. Basically, what I did was, because I knew, I was like, well, you know, from what I understand is that, you know, I don't know how he's going to respond to when I'm, because, you know, it'd been one thing. It's like, well, Chief, you're a little high. You know, it's a very different conversation to, hey, I just saw that we have about three times more administrators, you know, per sworn officer than any other agency within like a, we ended up, it was kind of interesting. Yeah. I pushed back.
So it's not three times the average, it's three times the next closest.
The next closest. So, I mean, like, so I was like, well, okay. So what I did was I sent an email and I basically said, Chief, we need to sit down and talk about the budget. Like, and we really need to sit down and have a conversation about the organization. Kept it kind of vague.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to have this conversation with you because I'm making some determinations here that these numbers, I mean, I didn't say this part, but in my head, I'm like, these numbers are so high, I'm going to have to make budget cuts or reassign some people to like, three times the average. I'm like, well, okay, I need you to come and see me, but you're going to schedule it. Not me. I'm not going to sit there and you're going to get in my office. But I send the email. I'm like, sir, I need you to come to my office. We need to talk before I present a budget because I'm about to do something with the organization. And he kind of doesn't really answer or respond to the email at all. And so what I did is I was like, okay, well then I'm going to do a reorg. And so there was these two positions that were very interesting. One was wholly and completely over information technology for the whole city.
Okay.
And that was the entire role as a captain.
But it's embedded in the police department.
Correct.
Okay.
And the other was kind of this catch-all human resources, office of professional standards position. And just so you know, the ratio for the I know the numbers and I didn't really share them. What we found was that there were six positions that were in, at least the way I defined it, and councils agreed with this pretty much. There were six people that were like pure administrators.
Well, why don't you unpack real quick? I don't think we actually even covered the composition of your department. Can you unpack what the original composition was?
Yeah. So what we found, our police department is, you know, patrol, detectives, and we have jail services. Animal shelter handles the animal control. Code enforcement is in community development. This is a relatively small organization.
Okay.
But we, and of course we have dispatch and all and records clerks and all that. At the end of the day, what we found was that we had six administrators that had pure, and what I would say in the six were chief, three captains, a lieutenant, and we actually had a full-time community relations, public relations officer. Now that's six positions. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had 23 officers on the street.
A 1-to-4 ratio?
Yeah. And so
seems a little high.
Right. And you may say, well, Theo, did you really need counsel to point that out to you? I was like, well, you know, first of all, I didn't really work the first budget. I tried to kind of gloss, you know, finish what the interim had done. And plus, I mean, look, we had the police department was like really the last department I started working on, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I was working on all these other departments a whole lot.
Was that a conscious decision because of that third rail of being naturally the third rail of PD and the chief's, you know, reputation, or is that just the way it just happened to go that route?
It's kind of the way it happened. I mean, the PD was, I mean, when I walked in the door, and I think we kind of addressed it a little bit, but you know, I kind of walked into a very unstable situation. You know, my predecessor had his own domestic issues. You know, we had an interim, but when I walked in the door, there was some chaos going on outside of the PD. So my focus was totally on like actually putting out fires in other departments, getting some things handled on that front. But the budget time's a perfect time to really be digging into some of these other like hyper technical things, because, you know, it's not just saying, you know, Joe, it's like, it didn't blow my mind that there was too many administrators. It's not like I didn't see, well, there sure are there are a lot of office people here and not a whole lot of people on the street. But the problem is like, there's a couple of things is like, you can't, if I told you, hey, you have too many department heads. And then and then your first question is, well, Theo, which ones? And I just shrug my shoulders, because that's what the council told me. You're right.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing. I don't know which one of these guys, I mean, like, are they all providing value or none of them providing value?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, because heaven forbid you budget cut and you've taken the heart and soul of that department away too.
You know, Theo, you kind of touch on something I think is important. I think there's a lot of city managers out there where with through experience and training and just general intellectual aptitude or intelligence or whatnot, they can see or sense that something's off, right? And or that something's wrong or something's out of balance, right? And that's fine. That's great. But I think a lot of folks err when they take action just without drilling down in and getting your ducks in a row so that you can go and like you can make that well-reasoned argument or rationale for why you made that decision. It's not enough to say, oh, I'm 99% sure there's an issue here or there needs to be a change here. You know, that's what I always tell my counsel. It goes, I'm highly confident that, you know, we're overstaffed here, or I'm pretty confident that we can probably trim here, but I need to do some more digging and whatnot. And, you know, I want to kind of circle back because I had an interest, God bless working in a small town. And again, I don't think small town managers get enough credit for the stuff that we have to endure, but I worked in a town of 2,500, my second stop. And my police chief lived in the same cul-de-sac with three of my council members. Okay. And I had five voting members and a mayor. So six members total. And I'm like, you know, now that puts you in a precarious position, right? when your police chief's living in the same cul-de-sac with the several members of the governing body, you know, they have a good relationship. And I told my chief, and we had a really good relationship. It was interesting because he was a first time chief. So he was great, boots on the ground. And we had a little bit of issues on the administration side and on the budget side, because he never had any exposure to that. And I'm kind of anal in that regards. And so we had some interesting conversations behind closed doors, you know, but it got handled and fine. And we had a really good relationship. But I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I had a lot of thoughts about, okay, if this situation gets a little rough or gets a little tense or whatnot, what am I going to do when I know I got him living in the same cul-de-sac as multiple members of my governing body? Me being me, I know what I would have done. If push comes to shove, I'm always going to make the decision that I feel I have to make, regardless of how difficult it is. But, you know, I don't really want to be in that position. You know, I don't want to have to be in the situation of going and making that choice. But that's the reason why I asked you if the police department was left to last for political reasons, you know, because I told my governing body. So when I got to South Hutchinson, there had not been a city administrator on staff for 3 years. It was just basically department heads were running the show. And it's okay for a time, but that's not the best, most efficient way to have an operation go. And so my governing body would say, hey, we want you to do a dive, you know, for efficiency, look at these departments and do a deep review. And I said, okay, that's fine, but do not send me on a deep dive review of PD or fire if you're not prepared to make
the changes that need to be made, right? And there's a lot of political calculus, especially in a small town. And that's the other thing too that I think a lot of people lose sight of. You know, I worked in a town of 2,500 people. One neighborhood can swing an election for a council member. You know what I mean? Like literally one neighborhood can literally swing an election. I mean, we're talking about that kind of vote total. So yeah, it's just precarious. But I sorry for a little segue, but I wanted to just kind of delve into that a little bit because there's some nuances when it comes to what's the sequence of events when you go after your departments and you're looking at efficiencies, right? Everyone knows that public works is treated much differently than fire and police, for example. Sure. So.
Absolutely. And I think to your point, you know, you were asking like, well, why did you decide to engage the chief rather late in the game? And it was largely because, truth be told, is that one, I didn't know if it was going to be an issue with the numbers or what those numbers would be. But more importantly, heeding the warning that I had been given previously and had actually heard from other people in the community as well, is basically I had an expectation that if even just looking at the number, let's put it this way, if the numbers were that bad, it's highly unlikely he didn't know that they were that bad. You know, in my own head, you know, if they are bad, I couldn't think of a scenario where it was like he wasn't going to go politic to the council for a month and a half before I got those numbers back.
Right.
You know, so truth be told is that, and that's just the truth. I mean, to your point, you know, if you're looking at it, and I would also venture to say is that I've dealt with police chiefs enough to know that some of them are very territorial. They're going to take offense to the fact you ever asked the question in the first place.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So that's
so true for so many situations.
Yeah, and that was definitely the situation here. And I knew that, so I wasn't going to rock the boat. And guess what? If the numbers would have come back normal, I just would have put it away. And I would have talked to the council and said, nope, fears allayed, everybody. Everything is fine. You know, yeah. And that's how I would have handled that and just moved on. But that wasn't the case. What ended up happening was, you know, he doesn't really respond for about, I don't know, 7-8 days. So I actually send him kind of not detailed, but enough of an information to say, like, I'm looking at cutting one of your captain and one of your lieutenant position and your lieutenant position.
Do you hear me now?
I said, I really think it's important that we have a conversation about it. And so he does. I tell him, he's like, okay, so what's the deal? And I, you know, I kind of go through here's the 6, here's the 23. And the first thing he says is, well, that community policing officer that doesn't patrol, doesn't really do anything, that's not administration, that's patrol. I said, okay, let's make it patrol. Okay, I was like, I'm not going to argue with you. You know, he's like, he said, you're factoring in Tony as that. And I was like, yeah, I do. I think that is the case. And he's like, I don't agree with that. I said, well, okay, I'll make an argument that I won't make that position administration. I'll go with, I'll make it patrol. So now it's 5-24. You're still the highest and you're still double the next agency.
Right.
Even if I want to play that game, like it doesn't work. We didn't really talk. Actually, what told me that he knew that was not a winning argument is that he and I talked for about an hour and 20 minutes in the conversation. That topic lasted the first 3 minutes. So we didn't even talk about the numbers, efficiency, effectiveness, anything.
What'd you talk about?
Most of it was talking about, so there was the captain position and there was the lieutenant position. And really what it came down to was he really was like, never could tell me why, but it was like, if I don't have these positions, the entire police department will just fold up and
collapse.
Operate and collapse. And that went on for an hour and 15 of the hour and 20 minutes. And truth be told is that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that if you have, like, even to make the argument that there was 5 administrators and not 6, okay? You know, if that were the case, 5 instead of 6, taking 2 away, and now that you're at 3-23, you're still higher than everybody else. In fact, you know, even with the budget realignment, you know, we're not we are, I would actually say, I think our numbers were still the highest, but we're like, we're at least like in a range. You know, it's hard to say when you're three times more than the next, but at least we're kind of tight grouped now in the group after the budget at that time. At the end of the day, when we walked out of the room, we had an agree to disagree that he wasn't going to go in politic to council, but that he disagreed with what was happening.
Okay.
And
I guess you can kind of live with if that's true, if he's going to uphold that end of the bargain.
Yeah. To which within days I was getting calls from council saying that was not the case. That's not what happened.
I spoke too soon.
Yes. And that he was quite abrasive with the council at the time. And truth be told is that there just was no argument. So I guess it's like one of those situations.
It's an indefensible position, really, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. So it became about emotions and about, I need this person, I need them, but quantify the need. You're not telling me what value they're adding. And what I would say is that if you really look at it, been over, you know, we've had that budget cycle and we're halfway through the next budget since then. We didn't recreate any of those administration positions.
How many did you end up cutting? What was the end result for that budget?
It ended up being two. We ended up taking that captain and a lieutenant position out.
So leaving four versus 23 then?
Yeah, 4 to 23.
Which still was higher than the average, I think, for your sample size, right? Your survey size.
Correct. Yeah. And we kept the community policing aspect. Now, you know, since then we've actually phased out that position as well. Now it's kind of like we've kind of put it on all the officers. You know, we've recruited a new police chief. Very proud of him. He does a great job. He came with 37 years of law enforcement experience coming to Dickinson. The last 9 years of it as a police chief, so he came in and has really been stellar for us overall. Furthermore, he has said, look, this position is now going to be shared by all the patrol. My expectation is that the department,
every officer is going to own community policing essentially, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so very, very proud that our community relations officer, our public relations officer, he retired and it was a great opportunity to do that reorg in a less dramatic fashion. So really now we're kind of sitting at a place where I'll tell you one of the things is that, so we have this, since then we've created an administration sergeant position, but one of the reasons why I think it's important that sit on the sergeant level rather than at the administration level. And it's because it's paperwork, but it's paperwork that supports patrol.
And, yeah.
And that person also has a patrol function or can be used for patrol.
Right.
Which was very different than some of these other roles
that were like strictly confined or chained to a desk, right? In the administrative capacity, right? Hey, don't lose that train of thought, but I have a quick question I want before I lose my train of thought. Does your department does the Police Officers Association, did it represent everybody below the chief or did it stop at sergeant? Because I know it's different organizations, different departments have unions that might just rank from, you know, patrol up to sergeant. And then there's like an executive sort of professional union for the, you know, above the sergeant level or whatever the case might be in your jurisdiction. How does that work over there for you guys?
Sergeants on down.
Okay. All right. So obviously I wouldn't imagine that were the executive staff represented by a union at all?
No.
Okay. So the sergeant, the union then I'm sure wasn't really too terribly upset that you were losing some executive staff, right? I don't think they were going to battle against you per se, would they?
No, I would say I think one of the big miscalculations in the whole thing for, you know, sometimes decisions get made and then they circle back and can bite sometimes is one of the big issues that some of even the chief's supporters had was that there was a year where the Police Officers Association received no raise at all. And in that year, in the same year after that had been concluded and everything inked, you know,
he gave the executive staff raises.
Yes, he went to council and basically pled for a very large for the executive staff and got it.
Yeah.
And so
that'll create some separation there.
Well, and it's not just the association. I mean, I think some of the council members that were kind of put in that situation didn't like the situation.
Interesting.
Because I've heard that. yeah, I wasn't here for that, but I've heard the story from so many angles, from so many people that were kind of a part of it, that it obviously was a, it would definitely hurt some feelings along the way.
Yeah. 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 So, let's move the story along then. Okay. So how does this get to the point where the you and the chief are parting ways and what have you? Because obviously how long after you took the job did the chief separate from the organization?
All right. So what happens is that the council approves the budget, and what happens is like, it's approved, but there's always, you know, like, so let's say we're in October 1 is when the budget starts, but you know, you always approve your budget for the next year, usually with like a couple of weeks left, like, you know, mid-September. Yeah. So kind of in this interlude, a couple of days before the new budget is to set in, the chief reached out to me and said, hey, if I reassign my lieutenant to a patrol officer position, would that be okay? I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's a vacancy, but surely he wouldn't want to take a lieutenant role and go back to a patrol officer.
Yeah, you're not gonna pay a lieutenant patrol rate, right? I mean,
right. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's like a severe cut, because I mean, you know, with the union pay and the, you know, executive pay, I mean, like, you know, it wasn't like he was gonna lose half his money, but I mean, like, right, you know,
it was a cut. Yeah,
it's a cut. But my point being is like, surely he, you know, are you sure he wants to do that? He said, well, let me call him. He calls him, I guess, and he calls me back. And he's like, all right, he's going to do it. And I'm like, all right, fine. Well, you know, staff evaluations come around that right after budget at that time. That's when I wanted to do them that year. And so it's like October 26th. For some reason, that date will stick with me for a long time. I'm going through my department heads. And, you know, in the scheme of things, outside of that one issue that Chief and I had, he treated me with respect, normally gracious, and, you know, he never really treated me poorly. So his evaluation comes up. It's a positive review. Positive is fine. And so what I said, and I actually put it in the comments, and when I was handing it to him for him to sign, was I said, oh, look, you know, you got a pretty good review here overall. You know, kind of glossing over the politicking council thing. I was, you know,
yeah,
I was like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I kind of chalked
it up. The battle was won. You're not going to, you know, there's no point in bringing up that issue, right? So
right. But what I do is I have in the comments, I'm like, hey, listen, I know that this is a rough transition. I know that, because he had told me all along, you know, I have to have this lieutenant, have to have him. So what I told him was, I said, look, I know that he's probably still holding on to some administration duties. I said, I know he's moved to patrol now, but he's probably doing some administration duties. So what I would like to do is, I said, as a kind of like a, you know, reminder to myself, and HR will have it, is, hey, by December 2nd, I want to make sure that all any administrative paperwork, anything that, you know, y'all might be leaning on him to do, get it out of his hands, because it's not fair. Yeah, it's not fair to him. He's not administration. He's a patrol officer. And that's not, you know, we need to align these duties to their pay rates, basically.
Right.
To which he kind of dropped a bombshell and he said, oh, he's never been on patrol. He's been in his office every single day since the new budget year started.
Okay. What happened there?
I was pretty stunned. I was like, I kind of was like, wait, so he's still.
He's patrolling a desk.
Yeah.
Patrolling the water cooler.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, that's curious, because I don't think because I said philosophically, Chief, I don't think that the council, the way he put it was, he said, well, I can assign him to patrol, but give him duties as assigned. I said, I hate to say this, Chief, but I said, you know, truth be told is I don't think that when the council was like, oh, let's cut a position, that their thought was, let's eat up a position that would be patrolling the streets so that you could keep an administrator. Like, we weren't cutting a patrol officer, because we could have cut a patrol officer. That was an open vacancy.
Well, you know, there's a lot of crime occurring in the police department headquarters, apparently.
Yeah, maybe. And so I said, I don't think that that's what the rule. I said, so look, here's the thing. December 2nd is still the date. Sounds like you're gonna have to do something.
Make a bigger adjustment than you're expecting.
Bigger adjustment, yes. And so that's on October 26th, and so we kind of send some formal correspondence saying to the effect like this is, you know, effective immediately. He's patrol. He's not an administrator. Actually, a funny story is actually in the conversation, he says, not only is he still an administrator, I've actually added grant administration to his duties, which is kind of important because in the email that HR sends out, because HR is kind of like, we were all kind of stunned. It's like, surely this can't be true. And HR sends an email to Chief to confirm, is like, so what you are saying is that he is still handling every duty he was handling before. And you've added. I know. And you've added grant administration to it since then. Since then, you've added a duty, to which he responded, yes, that is correct.
So did he even actually cut his pay? Do you know? Was that actually done? He cut his pay?
Yes. Look, that was above board. I mean, he was moved to the patrol position. All that was done. But he was still in the office. And like I said, I said, the council, there's no way that if I went and asked any of those council members that when we made the budget cuts we made, that what they were hoping for was that you were going to like put your administrator in that pay rate and then just keep them in that office. The goal was cut administration keep the number of people on the street. You know?
Yeah. So basically he just, like you said, he just wanted to take an administration position that he was going to have to cut and lay off and move it over to patrol in name only. Well, not in name and pay rate, but still keep him as administration.
Correct.
And he thought he could get away with that.
Right. And so what happens is so I kind of send that ultimatum to him, HR, and we, you know, kind of, you know, cause HR wanted to confirm that we heard you correctly. This happened, right?
Well, you must have been shocked, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would have been livid. I mean, I would have been shocked and livid. Were you pissed off at that point?
You know, I mean, obviously I wasn't happy about it. I mean, I wasn't going to sit there and, you know, truth be told is at that point when he had made that decision, I knew that something was going to come to a head.
Yeah.
And so what I was not going to do was let my anger control me.
And shoot yourself in the foot, so to speak, right?
Yeah. Do or say something. So basically what I did was I said, I need to understand that's what you did, correct? Yes. I kind of told him the philosophical thing I told you, to which he said, look, I'm the chief. I have the ability to do this if I want to. And so at that point, I knew that, well, we were at a place that we were not coming back from at this point. And so I didn't engage it at that point other than once, you know, HR confirmed through email that is what he said. Then we put out you are going to do this. And actually what happened was, and it took me a few days because I'm like, because you have to understand. So our charter is the chief is appointed by me, but approved by council. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And so a layer on top of all the stuff we had talked about that he was a police chief prior to that, a mayor, this was going to get political. All right.
And you don't have the authority to just unilaterally terminate your chief in Dickinson then, right?
It's silent. You know, it's kind of one of those that tells you how to appoint them. It doesn't tell you how to remove them.
You know, it's funny. We never unpacked this. We talked about this in the pre-interview, but you guys had a charter change in 2020 shortly before you arrived that converted your position from a city administrator to a city manager position too, right?
Correct.
Yeah. We left some of those details that were kind of missed in the backstory on that, but yeah. Okay. So what do you do now then? So the chief is this what basically leads to the chief parting ways? He's like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. So what happens is so in the on the morning of November 2nd, cause I wanted to make sure my ducks were in a row. So I took a full week because first thing I did was I needed to confirm that this was true. So I actually just asked a couple of people in the department. I said, is Frank still in this office? Yep. Okay.
I love how you're so taken aback by the chief's statement that you need a week to like, oh crap, what's going on here? Yeah. I said, what, the balls on this guy.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, you know, you don't believe, I mean, like I said, I mean, I was in kind of, I was a little shocked.
Yeah. Because you know, like you said, not to interrupt you, but you've reached a fork in the road and you're gonna have to go a certain direction, and you know what direction you're prepared to go. It's just like, do I really got to go there? But yeah, you do. So
yeah, and so some of it was like working with legal. So if you're like, well, Theo, you knew that on October 26th, why the morning of November 2nd? Or, you know, that's a week. I was like, well, you know, in my mind, the damage is already done at this point. Now I'd have to make sure that I'm putting the city in the best position possible
to protect itself from liability. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So I made sure we worked with legal. Went the lengths of having them kind of walk through the entire performance improvement plan. He was out, and truth be told, is that what I was bringing him in for was to put him on administrative leave. So that, and actually what I did was, and worked with the attorneys to do this, was the administrative leave was basically for him to correct the issues, and the things that he was needing to do was, listen, you don't need to be doing anything except for two things. One is, when you walk out of this door, you need to be working through the captains and you need to be reassigning these duties. Number two, my expectation is that by the time you walk into my office after this administrative leave, is you're going to show me an org chart showing me that you understand what the budget is telling you this organization is structured like.
Uh-huh. You know,
I want to see that, which was a little strange, you know, to me, that I would have to do that. But, you know, but that's where we were.
Yeah.
Basically, I told him, look, at 10, you know, so I was like, you need to come in at 10 o'clock a.m. I called him at 10 a.m. I said, I want to meet you at 2 o'clock p.m. When he walked in the door at 2 p.m., I was going to sit him down. I was like, he opened my door. HR was right there. I'm here. And he opened the door. He goes like, you don't need to do any of this. I'm retiring.
He saw the writing on the wall.
I'm retiring. And I said, well, that's fine, Chief. That's fine. But I have to do this. So please sit down. So he sat at my desk. Walked him through the PIP. It was just very strange, you know, be honest. He did retire. And of course, at that point, you know, obviously anytime a chief is retiring, you know, it's a story. And of course, in his story, you know, he had the pock shots in it about administration at City Hall.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what I got out of it was, you got to lean on the facts, and you can't be leaning on the, you know, I hope that the council just trusts me. Because if I didn't have the facts, it wouldn't have survived. Now, you may say, well, Theo, you could do that because the facts were so on your side. What if it's grayer than that? You know, what if it's dealing with operations and procedure, more of those issues, or not keeping council and city manager as abreast of certain situations as you would like? I do think you still have to lean on the facts. I think the blueprint is there. Maybe it was just one of those situations where the facts really leaned in hard on my side of it. But I still think that it has to be the facts, and you have to educate yourself of the facts.
But you also need a council who's going to back your play, right? It's even if you have the facts, if you don't have a council who's going to play ball and support the manager, you're still going to be in a predicament. So what kind of conversation and dialogue were you having with your governing body, if you feel comfortable sharing, leading up to this situation? Because I'm sure they had to be kind of clued into this developing situation.
Yeah. So as council members were being engaged by the police department, I was having to answer some questions, you know, I'd say this is that the count in May, kind of as there was a transition, there was actually a transition to council. We had term limits instituted as part of the charter amendment. So there was a huge influx of new council members. We had 3 brand new council members. I know that there was worry about making such a move so early in their tenure. And truth, you know, not on Chief, because I don't think anyone ever contemplated the retirement or resignation.
Yeah, that kind of came out of the process.
Yeah, it kind of came out of the process. So I don't think anyone calculated that. I think everyone was calculating,
the political fallout of shrinking the department, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know. The good thing for us is that, you know, we added positions. I mean, there were other things we did. We didn't just cut those 2 positions. We actually added some positions.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah.
So there was some more to it than just cutting the positions. But my point being is that, but it was still a calculus. It's like, I'll tell you, the political calculus was pissing off the chief. You know, I mean, I feel like, is this really want to do? And some of them who were like, I've been knowing the chief since I was, you know, knee high to a toad, stool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, something like that. So, you know, there were factors in, but, you know, I leaned in on the facts, explained the situation. Credit to them. Because to your point, there's a lot of councils that just would have said, don't think I want to deal with this at this time.
Yep.
And so.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate them for that. And they were amazing to deal with through the budget process. But I think at the end of the day, I think the facts were so clear that I think they were actually worried about, okay, now that this has been presented and we don't do anything, are people going to start talking about how we know there's a problem and we're not fixing.
Yeah, that's another angle to it, right? Be careful what questions you ask, because you're not sure if you're not willing to act on the answers, right? It's it could be a little dicey.
Yeah, so kudos to them for that. And so, chief retired. I don't want to denigrate his years of service. I mean, it's, you know, doing over 25 years for the city, you know, is an important feat. You know, him serving as mayor prior to that, you know, that's important as well. But at the same time, I'm a strong believer, and best way to put this is, I think I've always had a contract, and I have always had a severance on that contract. And the reason why is because I decided somewhere along the line, at first it was for my security.
Right.
Well, once I already had at least some level of severance and some contractual protections, I realized over time it became something else too. It's somewhat liberating. It lets me make some of these decisions that I have to make.
Right. Because you have that protection to make you have that protection to sort of suffer or endure the consequences of you making the right decision that might be politically deadly.
Yeah, so I mean, what I would tell someone is, if they don't feel comfortable talking to their councils about severances, maybe the discussion doesn't need to be revolving around, well, I need a severance because if all of you go crazy and rogue on me, you know, I'm on the street. Maybe the argument or the conversation can be framed slightly different. And I would say, hey, if this is the first time you're ever bringing up severance to your council, bring up the, sometimes I have to be able to make some tough decisions that you need me to make, decisions that you need me to take the arrows for over you.
Yeah.
And
for good governance, right?
It's for a good governance.
You know, I've never used that argument before. I don't think in the history of my talking about severances, and that, I appreciate you bringing that up. It's a very insightful comment, because you're right. A severance does give the city manager the ability to make the tough decisions, and which literally is what you need to do in order to ensure good governance, right? Because that's what our job is, to make those tough decisions. And
look, here's the truth of the matter is that we're all human beings. And I'm not saying that I would ever be motivated by this, but I can absolutely see someone being motivated by it. Or maybe if you're desperate enough, let's say there's a policy and you are in a situation where you need to pipe up and say that's a bad idea or that's a really good idea, but you know it's going to upset people. Well, if you know that in 72 hours you could literally have $0 and 0 cents coming, versus, hey, you have a 3-6 month or a year long severance. If in 72 hours they get so mad they let you go, are you more or less likely to give the proper policy advice in that moment?
You know, it's funny. This reminds me of a funny story. So I got crossways with my council one time, and I might have mentioned this in a previous podcast. It's hard to remember now that I'm 40 plus episodes in, Theo. But I got sideways with my council because I'm a pretty aggressive person, and I don't really back down. And they didn't really care for, some of them had some concerns about how I approached and handled a matter, a code enforcement of all things, which obviously every city manager loves is code enforcement cases. And they had a closed session without me. And one of the council members came out and later told me that they were talking about the situation, because, you know, it was possible they were going to, I don't know, do what they were going to do. But he said, you know, let's just cut to the chase. I was making $100,000 at the time with a 6-month severance, right? And so he goes, are you guys $50,000 mad about this? because if you're not, let's just go home.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that does change. Doesn't that reframe the argument?
It sure does. It sure does. And that's the other thing, too. And that's why I talk about severance in the context of having it be painful enough so that it doesn't. That you can't just allow capriciousness, right? The whims of members of the council to get emotional because somebody on Facebook said something one day, or a couple of people they know got in their ear in the driveway over the weekend, and they said, "Hey, we're upset about something," and then they come in, they want to fire you when there's no financial consequence for doing so, right? And that's why I think it's really important for city managers to have that protection and all the reasons you just cited earlier. So Theo, you get through this situation with your chief. He punches out of there. He sees the writing on the wall, obviously. And why don't you walk us through Dickinson and life in Dickinson post Chief Morales? What's going on now?
So since then we've recruited a police chief, brought 37 years of experience and over 9 years as a chief. So 37 years in law enforcement, 9 as a chief, and he's been really working really hard on getting our best practices re-recognition worked on. And one of the big things I would say is that I'm very proud to say that the Police Officers Association has been very gracious to work with over time, even before Morales's departure to after. And truth be told is I see it as an opportunity for the police department to take on a new identity or morphing. Whenever you have someone in the role for 25 years with the new day coming, sometimes it gives an opportunity for different ideas to filter up.
Absolutely.
So that's been kind of fun to watch Chief Barrison come in and do some different things and watch how that's been reacted to. Kind of like the final part of it is that, the city of Dickinson has a lot of work ahead of it. It was incorporated in 1977. But if you look at a lot of our ordinances, you look at a lot of the business practices of the city, didn't change a ton over that time. There were moments of change, but really in the scheme of things, there were a lot of opportunities for improvement. We're continuing to move forward in that. And so I'm very proud to be with Dickinson. And, some of these decisions have to be made so that a community can move forward. And that's our job as a city manager. If I were to say that's the one thing, we have to be willing to make those decisions that change an organization and change a community for the better.
That's awesome. Theo, you've had a very interesting experience in your short time with Dickinson, right? You have a very unique relationship, and obviously going back to episode 1 or part 1 of this podcast interview with you, with your department, and you've had obviously some changeover with your council. So you've gone through quite a bit in a very short period of time. I'd like to close with this. What do you find the most fulfilling aspect of your job, or what's paying your soul? I had this interview with Nick Kittle at the end of the year. It was a really popular episode. It really left an imprint on me. I think it's really impacted a lot of other folks. This job's really challenging, and people ask us, why the hell do you do it? Because of all the stuff that we have to endure. I'm curious, what really pays your soul and makes this job fulfilling to you?
The connection with the community. I'm a strong believer in giving back to the community as best as you can through the role as city manager. Sometimes the relationship does seem transactional because you have to negotiate a contract. You have this kind of cold interview process. You meet a staff. It feels very sanitized in some ways. But I do like to have that moment where it's like, hey, we're building new roads, especially when it's like new infrastructure in areas of town that have been neglected for a very long time.
Yeah.
And being able to see people's reaction to those things really warm my heart, and to go along with paying back into the community. One of the big things that I'm very proud of is that we have a robust internship program. So we take high school juniors and seniors for the summer, and we do paid internships. We don't do the unpaid stuff because we want kids to, because they'll just pick a job over the summer a lot of times. And so we pay on that internship. They read 5 Dysfunctions of a Team with me. And they go to work and they share their experiences across the departments. They learn about every department. They have a couple of field trips to Houston where they learn about urban planning. And the most fulfilling thing is over the years in the different cities I've done this, when you know, now I've had about four or five of the kids that I've had reach back out and let me know that, hey, I'm in urban planning now. This is what I do for a living now. And I didn't even know this job existed. So I didn't know the job of city manager existed. So I want to make sure to preach the gospel of city government to people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know what? You know, I'm going to end on this, Theo. Interestingly enough, this week I got my first connection request and conversation or message from a high school student up in the Kansas City, Kansas area, Mason Ain or Ain, A-I-N, a shout out to him. He wants to be a city manager. So he's ahead of the curve on all of us. Shout out to him. What an awesome internship program you have there to expose high school kids to government in Dickinson, Texas. And Theo, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an honor and a privilege to have this conversation with you. Thank you for being so raw, so vulnerable, and so courageous in sharing your experiences. I know it's going to be very helpful for a lot of our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. I'm Joe Turner. This is the City Manager Unfiltered Podcast, a podcast for city managers and other public sector executives. It's the most influential local government podcast in America. And if you like the show, you like the program, please hit the rate and review button. Please hit the subscribe and follow button. And please share it with your friends, your colleagues, your peers. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Catch you next time.